Any discussion of African American history in the United States is not complete without discussing African Americans in musicals. And joining me is Rebecca Forsty, who is going to be doing a presentation on January 30th at the Downtown Library on Ohio native Paul Laurence Dunbar, who is credited with having a great influence on early American African American presence in musical. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First of all, give us a little background on Mr. Dunbar.
Paul Laurence Dunbar was born in 1872 in Dayton, Ohio. His mother was Matilda, and she married Joshua Dunbar. Both his parents had been slaves in Kentucky. His father, Joshua Dunbar, had actually escaped from slavery. He came through Ohio. He worked in Canada. He had been trained as a plasterer as a slave, and he was able to work in that trade after he got his freedom. He joined the Union Army and fought with two different units in the Union Army. After the war, he moved to Dayton. He had been in Canada, and he met Matilda, who was Murphy. She had been married to a man named Murphy who died. She had also been a slave in Kentucky. She was in the process of attempting to escape when the Emancipation Proclamation was issued and made it unnecessary. And they both settled in Dayton. They had Paul, and he also had a sister who died in infancy. Paul grew up in Dayton. He was friends with Orville Wright in high school. In high school, he was an outstanding scholar. He was editor of the literary magazine of the high school. He was involved in different academic societies in school. He was the only African-American student to graduate from his class. He was well-liked by his fellow students at the high school in Dayton. He began writing poetry when he was a child. He wanted to work in a newspaper when he graduated from high school. He found that he wasn't able to get work, so eventually he took work as a person operating an elevator in a bank building in Dayton.
As he develops his poetic styles, and I say styles plural because he actually developed in two different ways, he established quite a resume in standard English poetry, quite a number of works. But he also developed something that was popular at the time or gaining popularity at the time, and that was dialect poetry. He was writing poetry in the Negro dialect of the day. And that was something that drew a lot of attention to him and his standard English poetry.
Yes, his dialect poetry was very popular. There were other people at that time writing in dialect poetry, but he was really good at it, and he had different types of dialect that he used in his dialect poetry. He did say that his parents didn't actually speak in dialect, but they told him stories using dialect and that he had been exposed to that. He is able to develop very vivid characters in his dialect poetry using different dialects, and that was very popular with the public. James Whitcomb Riley, who also wrote dialect poems, became aware of his work and encouraged him. They had a friendship, and that was part of how he became known and successful. He also wrote poems in standard English, and there was some resistance to the poems that he wrote in the standard English, although they were also very good poems. But the public was more, at that time, open to the dialect poems. That was something that was really popular with the public.
And it was the dialect poems that actually got him an opportunity to travel over to London. And while he was over there, he met a couple of very important composers of the day.
Yeah, he met Samuel Coleridge Taylor, a African-British composer, and he collaborated with him on, I haven't heard this, but I have a record of a musical or operetta setting called African Romances in 1897 with the words by Paul Laurence Dunbar and the music by Samuel Coleridge Taylor. Later, he went to work for the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., and a composer who was living in Washington, D.C. was the African-American composer Will Marion Cook, and they composed on two kind of important works. The first, in 1898, was originally called The Origin of the Cakewalk, and it was later known as Clorindy. That was like a musical that was performed in New York. And later, they collaborated on a musical that was originally called Dahomey and then was later called In Dahomey, which was the first musical written and starring an all African-American cast to appear on Broadway. That was on Broadway in 1902, and it starred the very popular musical comedy team of Burt Williams and George Walker.
And his work as a lyricist, it involved both his classical or standard English poetry, as well as his dialect poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did. With the musicals, which tended to be more in the line of comedy, the work for those was more in the dialect. But he did also have songs that were more in the standard English, but not as much in the musical theater realm.
Now, Mr. Dunbar, unfortunately, was short-lived. He passed away at the age of 34. In your work, have you discovered any references of more contemporary musicians or composers of the 20th century, we'll go with the 20th century, who have cited influences from Mr. Dunbar?
I'm going to say I've seen more poets citing influences and writers, not so much musicians, but I do want to say a little bit about the presentation. It's part of a series hosted by the music librarian at the Main Library named Steve Kempel. He has a series of presentations about music called Listen to This, and this is kind of a subcategory, which is the history of Cincinnati music, which is mostly presented by David Lewis, but I've collaborated on a couple of presentations. I've collaborated on one about Una Mae Carlisle that we did last year, and this particular presentation is part of a series called Putting on the Ritz, which has to do with the show people from Cincinnati. Earlier, I presented about African-American Civil War hero called Powell Hinton Beattie, who also wrote plays and appeared in Shakespearean drama. So that was a really interesting presentation and also relevant to African-American history. He's less well-known than Paul Lawrence Dunbar, but very interesting. Another thing that I found out about Powell Hinton Beattie in my research was that he was apprenticed to a furniture maker, African-American furniture maker from Cincinnati named Henry Boyd, and he's an important person in local African-American history also. So we presented about that in July and August. This is actually the third part of the Putting on the Ritz part, and I'm going to be presenting about Paul Lawrence Dunbar, and David Lewis is going to be presenting about Fess Williams, who is an African-American clarinet player from the early 1900s to about, I believe, 1925 or 1930. And according to David, he was the oldest African-American person to be recorded. There were, you know, of course, older musicians, but he was the earliest one to actually be recorded. So those are interesting things also.
Well, there's a lot of interesting things about African-American performance history here in Cincinnati, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. I'm so happy the library is taking this on and that you're bringing information about Mr. Dunbar's lyrics in what was then the contemporary African-American music theater of the early 1900s.
It's a very interesting story, and I'm really looking forward to talking about it, and I really have been enjoying talking about it today. Thank you.
Well, if you would like to hear Rebecca enjoy more talking about it at the presentation at the Main Library on the 30th, I'd like to thank this evening's guest, Rebecca Forstie, who's going to be making that presentation on the 30th. For more information, please be sure to visit our website at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Jim Stump.
On Emancipation Day by Len Spencer and Beth Osman. Streets are gay all the way, all the alleys done turned out. A Mr. Giles with a Miss Lyle makes a figure with a dove. Here they come, Lord, that drum in that black band the holds the sway. Except the brass, oh, give it a pass. On Emancipation Day, dog is standing on tiptoe.